You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. Crossover show with Aaron Freeman. It's brought to you by Draft on the Draft app or draft.com. It's the best, most profitable form of daily fantasy. Join it now. Use the promo code LONFL. Join the Locked On Vikings League and win some cold hard cash. Our guest is Aaron Freeman via the Crossover Show. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be talking with you. I've been admiring this Vikings team from afar, so I'm looking forward to seeing how the Falcons stack up against the arguably the best team in the NFC, if you discount the Philadelphia Eagles.
A lot of good teams in the NFC right now, Aaron. It's great to be on the show here with you. It's a very different situation than it was 2 years ago when the Vikings came into Atlanta, when the Falcons were in free fall, it seemed like, after that 5-0 start. The Vikings handled them pretty easily on that day, 20-10. Adrian Peterson had a big day. Matt Ryan threw a bad end zone interception, and Minnesota rolled. I think Atlanta has put it together, though, the last three. Matt Ryan with completion percentages 70% or above in the last three wins. Julio Jones has really gotten going. He just passed Adam Thielen in receiving yards with that 253-yard day. Is it safe to say Atlanta has shaken the Super Bowl hangover? Are they back in business now, Aaron?
It does look that way. With three really strong games, three strong wins, three mostly complete performances on both sides of the ball. You saw the offense get back on track to, I think, where people expected this offense to be all season long. They were in a little bit of a rut there during that second month of the season. And now the defense is starting to come on. The defensive line has played really well these last couple of games. But they suffered some injuries last week against Tampa Bay in the secondary. Desmond Trufant went out with a concussion. Brian Poole is now listed as day-to-day with a back injury. And that's going to be pretty significant injuries going up against a Vikings. It's weird to say a Vikings receiver core, given that I don't think many people would have claimed that Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs were the top duo of wide receivers in the NFL. But based off of their performance so far this year, I think the Vikings sort of own that corner where they have the two best the best duo of wide receivers right now.
And even going into this season, we knew that Thielen was good, but I think everybody considered Stephon Diggs 1A and Adam Thielen 1B. And now the roles have reversed for a variety of reasons. But number one, I think it's because Stephon Diggs is now in his third season where he's not playing quite 100%. He's got these little nagging groin issues, hamstring issues that have sort of plagued him his entire NFL career. And when healthy, Stephon Diggs has been very good. He's got greater explosive potential than Adam Thielen. But Thielen is just Mr. Consistency. You know, he's got five or more catches in every single game this season. He's the only player to do that in the NFL. He's got over 1,000 yards through 11 games. He's the first Vikings receiver to do that since Sidney Rice in 2009. And even when Diggs was hurt, Thielen was getting the brunt of the coverage, and he was still making defenses look silly. He's just got a really subtle way of running routes and leaning and accelerating that creates this unbelievable separation. So that's why he's got up nearly 100 yards per game this year. He's got 16 plays of 20 yards or more. Thielen is really special, but you can't sleep on Diggs because Diggs, if he gets a good burst, he'll burn you. And he's actually a pretty nice deep threat down the field, and he's got better speed than Thielen. So between the two of them, they've wreaked a lot of havoc on defenses. And then that kind of opens things up, too, for the tight end Kyle Rudolph and Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield. It's a nice offense right now for the Vikings. It's nicely balanced between the pass and the run.
Yeah, who would have thought that losing Dalvin Cook and then losing Sam Bradford and the Vikings offense would just sort of come out of it arguably looking better these last couple of weeks. And I think it's going to be really important for the Falcons to really sort of control the line of scrimmage to sort of offset some of the injuries that they may be dealing with this week in the secondary, just because of the quality of those wide receivers that you mentioned. And I think it's interesting to see sort of this Vikings offensive line, which was formerly a joke, has sort of come along pretty strong. I saw them a couple of weeks ago against the Rams, and you would have expected the typical Vikings offensive line going up against guys like Robert Quinn and Aaron Donald, who certainly made their fair share of plays in that game, but you would have expected them to get decimated, and the Vikings offensive line held up pretty well, and I think it's going to be important for the Falcons defensive line, headlined by guys like Grady Jarrett. You had Adrian Claiborne a couple of weeks ago against Dallas have a monster performance. You've seen Tack McKinley come on strong. You still have last year's returning sack leader in Vic Beasley and Dontari Poe. So I think it's going to be important for those guys to find a way to make that Vikings offensive line look more like its 2016 self than its 2017 self. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on sort of the improvements from the Vikings up front?
Right. Well, it's almost an entirely different group. They changed 80% of the line, and then the other 20%, Joe Berger, switched positions from center to right guard. So otherwise, it's a complete overhaul, and remarkably, with almost no time playing together in the preseason because of injuries, they came together week one, and they have been outstanding, and they've been aided by a mobile Case Keenum, who, unlike the statuesque Sam Bradford, really feels the pocket well. It's a quality about Keenum I didn't realize when the Vikings signed him. He's got some unbelievable presence back there, and he can scramble. He's not afraid to run. And Vikings fans might like him to slide a little bit more. He's really into that face-first dive, which is pretty dangerous. But that offensive line with Riley Reiff on the left tackle position, prior to that Detroit game where they gave up two sacks, Case Keenum had only been sacked once in six games. Mike Remmers, who has a concussion right now, he's been out for a couple weeks, but he hasn't given up a sack this year either. You've got a new left guard, Nick Easton, who replaced big Alex Boone. And that's sort of indicative of the Vikings' new strategy on the offensive line. They went from bigger to smaller. They've got more interior speed and mobility. So between Easton, the rookie center, Pat Elflein, and Berger, they have guys that can get to the edge. They can get downfield and block for these running backs. And they can allow the quarterback to sort of go scramble drill. And they can improvise because they're faster and more agile. So this is it's a totally different offense, really, from last year. More zone runs this season, getting to the edge more. And it's really fun to watch this offense block for a quarterback for a change, because last year was hideous with Matt Khalil getting hurt and Jake Long getting hurt and Andre Smith getting hurt. Everybody was out last year. You had fourth stringers in to tackle, and it just wasn't fair for Sam Bradford. This year, Case Keenum is reaping the benefits of a healthy and productive offensive line. And I'd like to hear a little more about this Falcons defense from you, specifically Devondre Campbell, because obviously he's a Gopher. He's a Minnesota graduate. He's of interest to people here. He's third on your team in tackles. What has he done well for you this season?
Well, a big thing for Campbell this year has been the shift from weak side linebacker, where he played as a rookie last season, to strong side linebacker. Now, in recent weeks, he's shifted back to weak side linebacker because the rookie that the Falcons drafted this past April in Duke Riley has been dealing with a knee injury. He's starting to come back, so Campbell's sort of splitting his time between strong side linebacker and weak side linebacker, and that's really benefited him, because one of the things that he struggled with, particularly as a rookie and still is sort of struggling with in his second year, is sort of his reading and recognition skills. And he's a little bit slow to react to some plays. And that was something that he was struggling to do from the weak side linebacker spot. But playing that Sam spot has allowed him to make easier reads and do a better job setting the edge. And also has allowed him to sort of shine, what be played, utilized in the best way that he's utilized, which is in coverage, where he can be a good matchup against tight ends. He'll be a big part of the equation to sort of slow down a guy like Kyle Rudolph, as well as strong safety Keanu Neal, who I think has been slightly better at covering tight ends this year. But I think given some of the injuries that the Falcons are going to have to deal with in the secondary, I think the Falcons are going to probably have Neal play a little bit more over the top this week to sort of cover up for some possible backup cornerbacks a little bit more. And so that's going to put a lot more on Campbell's plate to sort of have to take care of business against Kyle Rudolph. And I think he's capable of doing so. And he's also a guy that does a solid job against the run and flying around there and getting some big hits.
Aaron, we got to stop for just a second and talk about this fantastic new daily fantasy game. It's called Draft. If you like fantasy football, you got to listen up. It's not too late to join the 500,000 people that have already downloaded Draft this season. You get to play in a real, live snake draft. You're done in under 5 minutes, and they last for just 1 week. You can join one right now for Week 13. You're playing for cold hard cash, and the best part is that your chances of winning are 80% better than on salary cap sites. 80% better. And all new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code LONFL. Play a real money game for free by using the promo code LONFL. And it gets even better. Draft is so positive that you're going to love the experience that they're offering Locked On Vikings listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code LONFL. Join the Locked On Vikings draft. Take my money. I've got a question about Julio Jones, and it's not the kind of question you probably get, which is about why is he so good? Why is he so incredible? I know that he's good. I saw what he did against Tampa. I've watched all his catches. He's unbelievable. The way he goes, sells the post, and he goes to the outside, and the way he makes those sideline toe-tap grabs, he's remarkable. I'm curious why, prior to that game against the Bucs, why did he only have one touchdown? Who is getting the bulk of these red zone targets?
Well, one of the knocks on Julio Jones, at least from a fantasy standpoint or a statistical standpoint, is he doesn't get a lot of touchdowns. He doesn't get a lot of red zone targets. And what happens is often when the team gets down close to the goal line, defenses know, oh, Julio Jones is going to get the ball. And so we have to double team him. We have to sort of try to bracket him. And that creates opportunities for other guys to sort of feed off of that. And Roddy White did that towards the end of his career. We've seen Mohamed Sanu get a lot of those opportunities as well as some of the other quote-unquote lesser Falcons receivers. They also, the Falcons, like to run the ball when they get close to the goal line. And when Devontae Freeman was healthy, that was something that was very effective for them, and it continues to be effective with Tevin Coleman having two touchdowns this past week. So a lot of it is Julio's not getting the ball. It's sort of benefiting the rest of the Falcons offense and allowing it to operate at an efficient level. So I think it's one of those things where while it frustrates fantasy owners and to a certain extent, I think it really doesn't necessarily have a bad effect on the Falcons offense overall.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's going to be so fun to watch Xavier Rhodes against Julio Jones on Sunday. And I'm sure you've read the articles about Xavier Rhodes and what he's done about some of the top receivers in the league. And maybe you remember back a couple of years ago, it was Rhodes against Jones, and it was, I think, 5 catches, 56 yards for Jones. And if you were to apply a win-loss to Rhodes in all of these matchups against big receivers, I would say his winning percentage is probably 75-80%. More often than not, he's going to succeed in shutting the other guy down. This year, he's done a great job against Michael Thomas. He did a pretty nice job against Antonio Brown, Mike Evans. Last week, I would say it was a draw against Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones had a touchdown in that game, made some great grabs, even when Rhodes was in good position. But Rhodes is the type of corner that's going to get physical with you. And I watching that Bucs game last week, the announcers kept saying it. They got to press him. They're playing off, and they got to get up and bump him at the line. But I imagine it's really dangerous to do that with the speed that Jones possesses.
Yes. You asked how is Julio good? You know, he's good because he comes from another galaxy. But it's one of those things where it's like you talked about that Rhodes matchup, and you look at the two matchups that Rhodes has had against him in 2014 and 2015. And you could make the strong argument that Rhodes has done a better job against Julio Jones than any other corner based off of that pretty small sample size. And it'll be interesting to see if he can do that again. I think back in those years with the Falcons offense, if you could take Julio Jones out of the game, if you could contain him, then it would be very detrimental to the Falcons offense. And they really didn't have other options to go to at that point. I think what's changed over the last couple of years is due to the additions of players like Mohamed Sanu and Taylor Gabriel and now Austin Hooper and the running backs that they have that are very effective in the passing game. I don't think that's as much the case, but I do think it'll be a testament to what the Vikings defense and the Falcons offense can sort of do this upcoming week, because I do think the Falcons do have a potentially favorable matchup going up against the opposite corner with Trey Waynes and potentially putting Taylor Gabriel on him. Watching Trey Waynes, I know he's struggled in the past. I think he's watching him this year, he's played better, but I do think a quick, fast, explosive wide receiver like a Taylor Gabriel could be a guy that could give him a lot of problems. So it'll be interesting to see if Rhodes does sort of repeat that success he's had against Julio Jones, whether Gabriel or a guy like Sanu going up against Terrence Newman in the slot will be able to sort of pick up the slack. You mentioned Rhodes being able to press Julio Jones. That's really been, I wouldn't say Julio's kryptonite, but the cornerbacks that have been most effective against him have been the guys that have been able to sort of press him at the line of scrimmage and knock him off his routes. Guys like Josh Norman, guys like Xavier Rhodes. And when you give those guys safety help, as the Vikings often will do, that's really the formula for success to try to keep Julio Jones contained, have that sort of consistent press coverage and then the safety help over the top, and then hope that the other wide receivers on the Falcons offense don't really beat you. And that's been a formula for success for a lot of teams, but it's really difficult to execute that formula if you don't have the guys up front that can really get pressure. And I think that's why the Vikings have had so much success in the past against this Falcons offense, because guys like Everson Griffin and Linval Joseph and those guys are really good at sort of controlling the line of scrimmage up front.
A couple points on that. The Vikings are definitely going to provide safety help, and what they're going to try to eliminate everything over the top. And I could foresee a Julio Jones line of like 10 catches for 80 yards in this game, because they will give you up stuff underneath. And speaking of giving up stuff underneath, that's Trey Waynes' kryptonite. Trey Waynes doesn't like to press. He plays more off coverage, and he's not always great at accelerating to the ball if it's thrown underneath. Now, if you go deep on Waynes, he'll be in position. He just has to get his head around. That's the key with Waynes, but he has actually been much better this season. He got burned a lot against Pittsburgh and some of their deep threats, but since then, in week two, he's actually been really, really solid this year. And the Vikings secondary in general has been solid with the development of Mackenzie Alexander, their former second-round pick. Terrence Newman's still playing great. And their safeties, of course, Harrison Smith and Andrew Sandejo, who may or may not be healthy for this game. But you mentioned the defensive line controlling things. Everson Griffin tied for the league lead with 12 sacks, just had his third child on Thanksgiving, and he crowdsourced the name of the child. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter. That was pretty cool. I think he named him Sebastian ultimately. But Griffin on one side has been outstanding. He's put up the stats. But Danielle Hunter on the other side, third-year player out of LSU. He really came onto the scene last year with double-digit sacks. And this year, his numbers haven't been as good because teams are aware of what he can do. But he's going to take up a lot of attention, and that's what opens things up for Griffin on the other side, and it opens things up for Tom Johnson on the inside, who's their big pass-rushing defensive tackle. Linval Joseph can take on two blockers at once and still put up numbers. He's really, really good. And they're deep, too. They've been rotating in Stephen Weatherly, their former seventh-round pick. They've gotten Tayshaun Bower in there a little bit, their rookie seventh-round pick. And they get in Shamar Stephen at tackle, a little bit of Jaleel Johnson at tackle. They'll go eight deep on the defensive line. They'll stay fresh, and they'll just keep rushing that passer. And if you get in third and long against the Vikings, that's where it gets dangerous, because then they let the dogs loose. They'll bring that double A-gap blitz. And the running game for Atlanta will be key when it comes down to Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. I'm curious who you see as the better back at this point, because their numbers are eerily similar.
Freeman, I think, is the definite better back in terms of rushing the football. He's been extremely consistent this year, and when he seems to get the rock on first downs, it really sort of puts this offense in a much more favorable position. He's still dealing with his concussion that he suffered a couple of weeks ago, and it was his second concussion of the year, and so I think the Falcons have been extra cautious with bringing him back a little bit early. So his status for this upcoming week is still up in the air. He's still in the concussion protocol. It doesn't sound like at this point, early point in the week, where he's likely to suit up this weekend, but we'll see if that changes over the next few days. But I think Tevin Coleman has been very good. You know, he's arguably probably the best backup slash change of pace running back in the league. He's very explosive with his speed, and if you aren't sure tackling team, he can really hurt you in a lot of ways if you take bad angles to the football. He's not as consistent between the tackles as a guy like Freeman is, and not as consistent as sort of creating things on his own like Freeman does. But he's very effective, and when you give him, you know, 15 to 20 touches a game, he's liable to break one of those into in a couple of big games, big gains. And, you know, that's where his value is. And I think it'll be important for him to get going, particularly in the passing game, where I think he can sort of find a little bit of a favorable matchup if he gets locked up one-on-one against a guy like Eric Kendricks in the passing game.
Well, let's talk about where these teams are in the standings, Aaron, because Minnesota's in a great spot, but that could change very quickly. Over the next 2 weeks, they play Atlanta, then they play Carolina. I'm looking at your schedule, and this thing's going to come down to the last four games. You've got all division opponents, twice against the Saints, once against the Panthers. You know, right now you're fighting for your life, but if you win a couple of those, suddenly you could be vaulted to the top of the NFC South. I mean, this is a really competitive division right now.
Absolutely. You know, the Falcons got the Vikings this week. They got the Saints next week. Two of the three best teams in the NFC right now. The Falcons can certainly make their claim, I think, as one of the top candidates in the NFC should they make the playoffs. And then right now I'm assuming that they will, if they can sort of pull off a couple of wins at home over these next 2 weeks. But you're right, they have a tough schedule. A couple of weeks ago, it seemed like it was much too daunting a schedule given how poorly they have played. But with their recent turnaround, I think they're in a good position where they can really make a name for themselves in the wildcard hunt, and possibly with a couple of wins starting this week against the Vikings, can sort of vault themselves back into the driver's seat of the NFC South race.
Yeah, and the Vikings, on the other hand, you know, the first half of the season was unbelievably forgiving in terms of the schedule. They had 5 of 7 at home, and the 8th was a neutral site game in London against the Browns. So like 5.5 home games out of the first 8. Out of the bye, everybody's been counting down these first 5 games. At Washington, tough game. Home against the Rams, tough game. At Detroit, tough game. And now you got 2 more tough ones at Atlanta, at Carolina to conclude a 3-game road swing. And then you've got 3 what should be gimmies at the end of the year. You've got home against Cincinnati, and then assuming Rodgers doesn't play, at Green Bay. Now, that could still be a tough game at Lambeau, but without Rodgers, obviously much easier. And you finish the season home against Chicago, should be a win. So the Vikings are just trying to get past Atlanta, past Carolina. Maybe they split those games. I think Vikings fans would be fine with that. Get to 10 wins going into those final 3, and then you've got a great chance to either run the table or at minimum win 12 and probably get that first round bye. And that would be huge for the Vikings to get a home game in the divisional round and maybe have a chance to host the NFC Championship game and then have a chance to host the Super Bowl, obviously, in February. That's a long way off, though. I am curious, one more thing on you guys, and then you can ask of me whatever you want. I'm curious what led to that skid wrapped around your bye week. You lose at home to Buffalo. You lose at home to Miami. What did those teams do to shut down the offense in those 2 games?
Well, I think they played well up front. Both of those teams had pretty solid fronts, and they were able to control the line of scrimmage to a certain extent. I think part of it was the Falcons' play calling and not really having, you know, Steve Sarkisian taking over for Kyle Shanahan and really struggling with making mid-game adjustments. The Falcons would come out pretty strong early in games and then sort of lose it and peter out in the second quarter, in the third quarter. They were really bad in the third quarter during that stretch of games. And I think that's sort of changed in recent weeks. And part of it is owed to the Falcons players playing better, but I think a lot of it is owed to this coaching staff, particularly Sarkisian, doing a much better job utilizing his playmakers and sort of incorporating some of those things that Kyle Shanahan did on a regular basis to get that offense to be the best in the league last year. And it looks like he's doing a better job utilizing those same elements in recent weeks to sort of get this offense back on track to the expectations that I think a lot of people, including myself, had going into this season.
Can't wait for the game, Aaron. Do you have anything else that your listeners would find of interest about the Vikings? I've kind of crossed all my questions off the list. If you've got anything else, go ahead.
No, I think we hit it all. I'll be curious to see whether or not the Falcons can sort of match the Vikings in the trenches. I think that's really where the Vikings have owned the Falcons in their recent matchups. The Falcons have sort of been vulnerable against physical teams like the Vikings. I think one of the changes, Dan Quinn has tried to push this Falcon team to be a much more physical team along the line of scrimmage. And it'll be interesting to see if going up against the Vikings, which will be a true litmus test for that physicality, whether or not the Falcons will be able to go toe-to-toe. And I think this game will be won and lost in the trenches. Whichever team comes out looking stronger there will be the team that winds up winning this game. And I think right now I'm optimistic that the Falcons stand a pretty good chance there. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. I'm not ready to make a prediction yet, but just knee-jerk reaction here on a Tuesday, it feels like if the Vikings are going to get humbled at some point down the stretch, this could be the game where that happens, just because of the potential for explosiveness in that Atlanta team. Case Keenum has been playing so well for so long. Is he due to have a blow-up game? Hopefully not, if you're a Vikings fan, but I am leaving the door open for maybe a big Atlanta performance. And I'm sure Vikings fans are all hating me. They all hope I'm wrong, and that's okay. I'll take all the heat. Aaron, thanks a lot for appearing on this show, this crossover show. Where can people find you on Twitter?
I am at FalcFans on Twitter. They can, of course, follow the show Locked On Falcons on Twitter as well, at Locked On Falcons. And Sam, I'm hoping we get an opportunity to do this again later this season, possibly in January.
Hey, we very well might. And by the way, your fans can follow at Sam Ekstrom on Twitter, of course, at Locked On Vikings as well. I'll have updates from Winter Park and the Vikings facility for most of the week when they get back to the grind on Wednesday for their set of three practices.
All right, Sam. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Today's crossover show brought to you by Draft. Draft app, draft.com. Use the promo code LONFL for a free play. Join the Locked On Vikings Draft and start winning some money this week.